Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
We're going to talk about space with Adam Frank, professor of astrophysics at the University of Rochester and author of Light of the Stars, Alien Worlds, and the Fate of the Earth. How you doing, Adam?
Doing pretty good today.
Professor, I appreciate your time. I really do. And you don't know what West Wego is, but some have said it is an alien world.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's a metropolitan area it's a city in a metropolitan area, and I just got everybody there mad at me is what I did. But it's just a joke. We're just kidding. Professor, tell me about the budget that NASA has proposed and what are they going to do with it?
Yeah, so it's kind of exciting. Proposed budget is $27.2 billion. Which still represents, you know, a little teeny tiny fraction of the total amount of money that we spend on space, which is amazing when you think about all the stuff that human beings have spent their entire history wanting to do, and now we can do it, and, you know, we barely spend anything on it. But anyway, a lot of that's going for the Artemis program.
Wait, who barely spends what on what?
How much we spend. So we spend, Americans spend somewhere, I think, around, like, I'm not sure about this, I think it's around $7 billion on potato chips a year, you know, and if we all just spent a little bit less on potato chips, we could have a submarine on the moon of Titan, you know, right now. So I'm just saying that, like, you know, space, human beings have been looking at space, dreaming of going to the moon, dreaming of Mars for the entire time that we've been around. And now we can finally do it. And we still just spend, like, you know, like just a drop in the bucket to make those dreams.
But, you know, I guarantee you somebody's listening right now and they're saying, what, are you crazy? $27.2 billion. We got problems with schools. We have problems with crime. We got this. We got that. That money could be better used. Forget about space. What would you say to that, Professor?
I would say, you know, look back in history. I would ask that person to, like, name two or three moments in history, places in history they remember, like, that they've heard of, right? Mm-hmm. And they might come up with, like, Rome, right? They might come up with Egypt, right? They might say, you know, Renaissance Italy, right? Why don't they think of, like, you know, Albania in the 9th century? And the reason is, you know, I got nothing against Albania, but I'm just saying, like, amazing things happened in Rome 2,000 years ago. And 2,000 years from now, it's this, what we're doing in space, is what we're going to be remembered for. Like, when we think about making America great, that's a term you hear people use sometimes. Mm-hmm. Well, what really makes America great? What we're going to be remembered in 2,000 years from now, when every politician who's alive now, their names are long become dust, we will remember the fact that we got to the moon. We will remember the fact that we opened up space for a human, not just exploration, but human settlement, because 2,000 years from now, I'm telling you, if we make it through, you know, wars and climate change and everything, there will be hundreds of millions of human beings living in space. So that is why it matters. Like, I agree, we have to take care of schools and everything else. Mm-hmm. But when you look at NASA's budget, which is like maybe it's less than 1% of federal spending. And yet this is the thing that is ultimately that America is going to be remembered for. That's my
you
answer.
Said 2,000 years from now. Do you think we'll be here 2,000 years from now?
I certainly hope so. We were here 2,000 years ago. Right. So if we can handle the problems that, you know, that we're dealing with now, I think we're going to be here 200,000 years from now.
Wow.
So, but it all depends on how smart we are, whether we can get our act together.
I'm just shooting for 2050. I have a lower bar, Professor.
I'm with you there. Let me get to retirement, then I'll be happy.
Let me get to 2050, then I'll worry about 2,000 years from now. So what is going to make, people will remember it, but what is going to make us better as a result of having gone into space?
Well, I mean, you know, so I just gave you this, like, sort of grand reason why we go into space. Here's some more reasons that are much more practical. Things that are in your life right now that would not be in your life if it wasn't for the space program, that we do space exploration. So let's start off. Has anybody out there ever taken a selfie? Right?
Sure. Right.
That's technology that came directly from the space program. Okay. Does anybody have a device that they use that's connected to the internet? Those devices came directly from the space program. Has anybody ever slept on a memory foam bed? You know, that came from directly from the space program.
Really?
So literally, the list goes on. CAT scan technology, sunglasses that don't scratch. I mean, it goes from the trivial to the, you know, to industries that are now worth, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars, including the internet. I mean, just the internet itself was driven so strongly. I mean, you know, NASA wasn't only responsible for the internet, but a lot of the infrastructure that was built during the 80s, 70s and 80s, which led to the internet, came out of what NASA gave. So, you know, the idea this is not money well spent is just doesn't stand up, right? On both the super high level, when we think about like the future of humanity, and on the super mundane level of like what technologies made America rich last year, you know, on both levels, this is money that has the return on investment is insane.
What does NASA intend to do this year with the 7% more that they want? I think was a 7% increase, taking them up to 20 something billion. Is it enough?
7.2. You know, it's never enough for what we could be doing, but it's good that it's going up and not going down, right? So the most important thing right now is the biggest project NASA has on the books is the Artemis program to go back to the moon. Mm-hmm. So we saw the success of the first Artemis launcher, which did a lot of really interesting and amazing things. Nobody was on it, but it was the shakeout, as they call it, of the systems. And it took, you know, I mean, this is like, for most people are gonna be like, well, why is that important? But it was really important. It took it on an orbit. There was an orbit. It was like building a highway that nobody'd ever built before. They used this orbit that had never been tried before, which is gonna be very important for eventually having a permanent moon base, which is the coolest thing ever. A lot of the money is now going for Artemis 2 is going to be the next one. That's the next launch that's going to have people on it. And they're not going to land yet, but they're going to, you know, do this kind of orbit. And it'll take people further out than have ever been. It'll take people further away from the Earth than has ever happened before in history. And then, you know, the next one, Artemis 3, Artemis 4, eventually landing people on the moon. And I think the landing is supposed to be, I'm not sure because they got some delays. I think it's either 2025 or it might be 2028.
So wait, let's recap. What has Artemis done so far?
Artemis, what they've done with Artemis is they have built everything. And then this year, they flew Artemis 1, which was a test of the rocket launches and the capsule's capability. And they flew it out to the moon. They went around the moon on a, you know, farther than anything has ever gotten before in terms of, you know, these kinds of technologies, and they brought it back. So they tested the whole system, and this is going to be the backbone for eventually having a permanent presence on the moon.
So why somebody texted in? I think it's a good question. Matter of fact, the phone line, the Okunard Jeweler Talking text line, is open at 504-260-1870 as we talk with astrophysicist Adam Frank about space and the money that NASA wants and the Artemis project here. Why did they have to test it again if they had done this successfully so much with so little technology, or relatively speaking, as they have now? Why couldn't they just put somebody on the moon and do it the way they did it then, but better?
Oh, you mean like 50 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
but I guess what they're saying is the technology that existed then allowed them to do it 50 years ago, so you would think they'd be able to do it again with today's technology.
But they have to rebuild it. It's literally been half a century, right? It's not like the thing is sitting in the garage, you know, like with the, with that 67 Charger that you have in your garage that you love, and you just pull the thing off and take it for a drive. Like, all that technology is gone. They have to rebuild it. I mean, I wish we kept going, right? I wish in the 70s we'd never stopped. But they had to rebuild everything. And also now they're building for something different. We're building now for a permanent habitation on the moon. Like the moon, you know, we are going to be starting a permanent presence, human presence in space. And this is not going to be just the government. It's going to be industry as well. This is the start for actually having a viable commercial presence in space. So, you know, it's that you have to rebuild the technologies, and you'll be rebuilding the technologies for the modern era where you're expecting to be, you know, having a whole infrastructure of a moon space station, you know, commercial landers. So it's, you know, you're certainly using what you learned from 50 years ago, from half a century ago, but you're also building for the future.
All right, now I'm going to give you some questions that came in via text, and you need to remember that we are not all astrophysicists, okay?
It's all good.
All right. Have we improved the speed through which we can travel in space? And I guess they want to know if it takes the same amount of time to go to the moon or not, or...
That's a great question. That's an awesome question. No, not really, because it's still, you know, it still takes, you know, a couple of days basically to get to the moon. And that, if you really want, the problem is if you want to go faster, you also have to turn around and slow down faster. And there's only, the reason these rockets are so gigantic is because you got to carry all the fuel with you from the ground up into space. And that includes, like, you know, turning your engines on to get in space to get to the moon and then turning your engines on backwards to slow yourself down. So still pretty much we're traveling at the same speed. The engines have become more efficient. The engines, you know, the engines in general are better. But we're still traveling at the same speed. But that's a great fundamental kind of question.
So when you're in space, you can only go X amount of faster. What if we were going beyond that to whatever's beyond the moon, if we were going to go to Jupiter or something? Can you hit the accelerator and really punch it or not?
Yeah. But the problem isn't speed. The problem is fuel, right? This is until we have nuclear reactors in space where we can just, like, leave the engine on, right? What we have to do now, because it's so expensive to haul a gallon of gas up there, that you have to hold on to every drop of that gallon. So you turn your engine on real quick and then turn it off and then coast, you know, until you come to the next time. Then you turn your engine on and turn it off because the gas is so expensive. So eventually, I hope, we'll have things like nuclear fusion reactors where you can just, you know, leave the, you know, drive the whole way there. Then you could get to Mars. Like, if you had an engine that could keep burning, you could get to Mars in a few weeks, you know, a month maybe. Now it takes like 9 months.
All right, let me take a quick break here, Professor, because somebody texted in. I think this is a good question. Actually, they didn't text it. It's my question, which is, if we can have a nuclear-powered submarine, why can't we have a nuclear-powered spaceship? And you can answer that when we come back. We're talking to astrophysicist, professor of astrophysics at the University of Rochester, and our good friend Adam Frank, author of Light of the Stars, Alien Worlds, and the Fate of the Earth. He's convinced we'll be here 2,000 years from now. You can mention that too. You can text in about that. Do you think we'll be here 2,000 years from now? 921, Tommy Tucker, back in a flash, WWL. 926, we love talking to Adam Frank, professor of astrophysics at the University of Rochester, author of Light of the Stars, Alien Worlds, and the Fate of the Earth. His time is limited. We would talk to him for an hour every day if we could. So if we can put a nuclear submarine or power a nuclear-powered submarines, why can't we have nuclear-powered spaceships?
That is actually, again, a great question. I'm talking about fusion power, not fission power. All the ways we make energy with nuclear power right now is with fission. We take big radioactive elements like uranium and split them apart. Mm-hmm. You don't want to have that stuff on a spaceship. So, you know, that announcement they had just like a month ago where they were the first time they were able to get fusion, which is what powers the sun, to work in a laboratory. That's the future of both energy on the planet, you know, on Earth, and in space. Because there you don't have to bring up a giant case of like super radioactive stuff to sit in your spaceship.
So wait.
So that's the hope.
But it's already working in a submarine? What did they discover? I'm confused.
Well, no, so fusion, which is what powers the sun, we don't have any power plants working on fusion. Fusion is the cool thing about fusion, if we can get it to work as a power plant, is that literally you could like almost use water. You could pour water into the tank.
But it's not working on submarines now?
No, that's fission. That's
oh,
fission.
Oh,
all
I
those
see.
Things use, yeah.
I thought so you meant that's the what they were plant. Doing when they were on a sub. I'm just kidding.
No,
go ahead,
no.
Please.
Yeah.
I love making jokes with a smart guy. Anyway, so go ahead, Professor. So we need to get to fusion.
Fusion. Yeah, which is what powers the sun. And we'd have like, if we could get fusion to work on Earth, we would have unlimited, clean, abundant power, you know? And so that's why that announcement, it was like a month ago that a laboratory in California, the Lawrence Livermore, they've had the first time they got a fusion reaction, same kind of energy that the sun uses, to work in a laboratory.
I thought you said the sub. That's what confused me. I thought you were saying the sub.
The sun and my bee.
I got you.
The sun.
So how important was this dry run to split up that meteor or whatever it was they did?
Oh, DART. Yeah, that was awesome. Come on. Was that awesome or what?
It was.
Like, you know, that was pretty cool. Yeah. That was really important because, you know, sooner or later, we're going to get hit with an asteroid. Whether, again, we're talking about 2,000 years, right? You know, if human beings stay around, sooner or later, there's going to be a large enough asteroid that's heading towards Earth that could be a city killer. And we got to figure out how to divert them. So that was the first time we proved this technology that, yeah, you could actually, like, nudge a asteroid a little bit by firing something at it. So, you know, again, that's the kind of thing that there's still money in the budget for NASA to continue that kind of what they call planetary protection.
Is there any way to predict, look through telescopes and see, well, you don't have to worry about that for another 50 years or another 100 years, or do these things just appear out of nowhere? And I know that's probably a dumb question, but...
No, it's not a dumb question. We got to look. And so that's what, part of NASA's budget for the last, I don't know how many years, has been to, like, search the heavens for, you know, and to catalog all of the Earth crossing, you know, asteroids that will cross Earth's orbit. And we've gotten a lot of them, but there's still more to find. And so then you got to catalog them. You got to know where they are. And then you got to keep following, because as they move through space, they're constantly getting tugged by, you know, all the different planets. So you got to follow them for any adjustments in their orbits that can happen. But that's what we're doing now. We're making a census of all the asteroids that could potentially cause problems for Earth. Keep following them. And if we have to, you know, go out and do what that experiment did, you know, have a whole way of getting out there, and long before it gets close to us, nudging it out of the way.
I know you have to go, but how do you even wrap your mind around a universe that is limitless, that goes on forever? Because it makes me dizzy, Professor, when I try to do that, because you think it's got to end, but it doesn't. But it has to, but it doesn't. And it keeps going on and on and on. And how do you wrap your head around that?
I got the same problems everybody else does. Infinity, you know, nobody can really wrap your mind around infinity. What I got is math. And the mathematics is like a language that allows me to express it. I can write equations down and manipulate them, and that shows it's a way of talking about it. You know what I mean? Like, just like, you know, French is a language. I can say certain things in French that maybe I couldn't say as well in English, you know, nuances. And that's what math does. So, but it's still infinity. Yeah, man, my mind melts when I try and imagine infinity too.
Do me a favor, find some more time for us, please, because I'd love to have you on for an hour one day. I know you're a busy guy. I know you're busy, but we have fun. Find some time, please.
I will.
Thank you, Professor.
I enjoy talking.
Have a good day. All right, Professor Adam Frank, professor of astrophysics at the University of Rochester, author of Light of the Stars, Alien Worlds, and the Fate of the Earth. I love Westwego. I'm just kidding. We're going to take a break. We come back, we're talking about the origins of COVID-19, because I'm still confused with where they think this thing came from. Now they're talking about raccoon dogs, which I didn't even know they had. A lot of stuff to discover on this Earth yet, let alone space. 9:32, 28 before 10. Traffic now, WWL.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.